Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, May 5th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a sunny 56 degrees and very springy here in upstate New York. All the fruit trees are flowering and all the regular trees' leaves are popping out. And not just me, but the cats, too, are all having allergies. So it's a wondrous time of year. Where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Stem Cells Reanima Project, Biotech Trying to Reverse Brain Death. And if you remember one of the very last stories we looked at, we spent like the most of the show looking at regenerative medicine and stem cells in particular and how they are able to create, well, they're able to pretty much coax not just skin cells, but also your fat cells into almost any cell now from the human body back to its original state and have it reproduce. And they're hoping that this will be able to cure all kinds of disease. They can make lung cells and heart cells and blood cells. And I don't know how many things did we talk about. Let's go on and on. Brain cells, too. That was the other one, the little mini brain balls. And work on Alzheimer's and all this other stuff. But then comes the horror, because you knew that once they had started creating little mini brains and little thinking, they're thinking brains, don't forget. They just don't have any input yet. They don't have any ears. They don't have any eyes. You can't touch anything, but they're still thinking. You knew that Frankenstein's monster was not too far around the corner. And that's where this reanima project comes in. Let's put Big Pharma in charge of brain dead bodies and see what they can do. This is beyond horrifying. I think we're going to kick off here today. This is where we're going to start reading and then we'll continue on. I don't know. Did we make this whole, I think we made this whole story yesterday, but we'll at least start it because then I have a second story as well. It says, biotech company has been given permission, and they've been given permission by the National Institute of Health, we found out, to try resurrecting the clinically dead. In a controversial move, the U.S. biotechnology company has been given permission to recruit 20. How do you recruit 20 clinically dead patients? I don't know. But recruit 20 clinically dead patients and try to bring their central nervous systems back to life. They can successfully reanimate parts of the upper spinal cord where the lower brainstem is located. There's a possibility that they could kickstart vital body functions such as breathing and heartbeats, something that these patients can only now do with the help of machines. This represents the very first trial of its kind, and thank goodness we have been doing this. But guys, Isle of Dr. Moreau has just now taken a scary turn. It's not like Arctic flounder tomatoes anymore. We're talking about zombie apocalypse, pet cemetery, or reanimator, like Dan brought up yesterday. I totally forgot about Herbert West and reanimator. And this is stuff that nightmares are made out of. And when we rejuvenate these people and we start injecting them with stem cells and using electrotherapy to stimulate the brains or lasers they were using too, what's going to happen when these people that have been under for 10 years or whatever, you know, they haven't been doing physical therapy, I could almost guarantee you. They maybe flip them once so they don't get bed sores, but they most certainly don't put them on a TENS unit or on a stationary bicycle to get their muscles exercised so they're not wasted away from laying around for all those years. So what's going to happen when this person wakes up and not only is their body completely wasted away, but their brain is not going to be the same as it was before? And maybe if you just had an injury and it healed and you laid there unconscious for a long period of time and then just woke up one day, you know, there've been people that's happened to. And some people that it's happened to have absolutely no major side effects, but I'm going to tell you what, If they're injecting you with stem cells so your brain like starts growing, doing all these, who, I mean, it, this has never been done before, okay? We don't even know what this is going to do. So this person's going to wake up and all of a sudden be, I don't know. I just don't even know how the National Institute of Health could have given approval for this. But wait, we found out that, yes, they're going to recruit 20 patients, but the experiments are going to be done in India. Now, India, I know you guys point and laugh at India, but India is a powerhouse. You know who made it a powerhouse? Oh, Mr. Mad Science himself, Billy Gates. Yeah, Bill Gates went over to India with lots of money and lots of vaccines, and he wanted to build an empire of programmers and have lots of people to be able to test his shit on. And so India worked out just well. He built programmer villages and gave them lots of skills and jobs because there were lots of educated people, just not a lot of jobs there. And then he can go and take entire villages and that can't read and have them ink their consent form to this new experimental Gardasil vaccine that they don't understand, so that all these girls get sick and die and get sterile and whatever in this Indian village. They're now suing, by the way. That was a big deal. They're suing Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But, you know, India was kind of brought into the fold by Bill Gates as where American companies go and American pharmaceutical companies go, especially if they want to practice mad science. So now here we have a biotech company, BioQuark. This represents the first trial of its kind and another step toward the eventual reversal of death in our lifetime, says CEO of BioQuark Inc., Ira Pastor. The BioQuark team, which was granted permission from an institutional review board at the National Institute of Health in the U.S. and in India to begin clinical trials whenever they are ready, says that it plans to start recruiting patients for its so-called Reanimal project immediately. Now, one of the things that I mentioned yesterday is that these people are in a vegetative brain-dead state. I mean, I don't know what happened to them. They haven't picked anybody yet, but most likely they had some sort of accident. You know, typically, I mean, anything could happen for you to go and slip out. You could have some sort of treatment and just never wake up. But typically, before you went into the coma, brain dead, vegetative state, I mean, beyond brain dead and beyond coma and vegetative, you're brain dead at this point. But before that happens, most people did not ink something called a living will that said what your instructions were if you ever found yourself in that state. Now, I don't know if they're targeting only people with living wills. It does not say in either story. But the fact of the matter is that these 20 people who they are now going to be trying to bring back from the brink of death, did they ink anything that said, hey, I want to be a guinea pig, and if I'm ever in a vegetative state, keep me on a ventilator for 10 years. Keep paying and soak my entire estate. Make sure that there's nothing left for my wife and kids because you've been paying for me to be on this ventilator all these years. And, oh, if the technology happens to come about while I'm brain dead on these machines sucking my estate dry, please, oh, please, inject my brain with brain stem cells and turn me into a Frankenstein project and see what happens when you try to reanimate me. I mean, I'm gonna probably guarantee you that not one of these 20 people that they're going to put in this experiment inked anything like that. Now, maybe though they had something in their will or on the back of their license sign saying that they want to donate their body to science, I would say that maybe that would give them carte blanche to do something as horrifying as this. But if this means donating but your body to science, no thanks. You know, actually, we should look at that. There was a story I'm going to go there right now. There was a story I posted on my WTF page a couple days ago. I'm trying to think of what WTF, trying to think of what publication it came out of. Hold on, we'll go there. But there was a story about that very thing, and it was pretty horrifying. They had a partially decomposed body on the front. I was at a medicaldaily.com. What does it mean to donate your body to science? Maybe we should maybe look at this one. And maybe we'll see if reanimation and brain death is one of the things that they allow. Oh, don't even. You know what, guys? Here's the thing. I am not quite sure how I'm going to continue when I don't have a machine now. I don't, not at all. I have no machine, including my phone. I have no machine that none of my browsers work properly at all. If I click on anything, if I try to open anything, I open a page, I click on a link, it's open now because I had to kill the whole browser, and now the browser's not killing, so the whole show right now is dying in this browser. But if I try to click on anything... Yeah, we got to close it. It's a plug-in container. I think it's Flash, guys. It really seems to be Flash on every browser right now. But I click on anything, and it causes the browser to go into not responding mode. And I just tried to open that. Tried to open that document, and it did it again. Hold on. I've had to rebuild the show already. That was time number 5 now this morning. It's getting very, 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 very difficult to even get an hour out or to even feel motivated to get an hour out after you've had to do it 12 times before the show even started. I'm not sure what to even say or what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to take a baseball bat. I'm about ready to flush my phone down the toilet. All right. Here we go. All right. Well, we're going to try on this machine now. This machine, I don't have any show queued up. Let's see if we can even make this come up. Different browser. This one's an IE. It's like whack-a-mole. I got to say, I have way more important things to do in my day and with my time that is very taxed as it is than to fight with browsers for an hour and a half to be able to do a 1 hour show. I hate to say it, but it's almost getting to that point. I cannot cost justify the amount of time that it takes for me to put all this crap together and redo it 32 times when I have all this other stuff that is sitting there waiting and weighing on me because it is very important and I am putting this show first. So I guess we'll see, but I don't have the money to buy another computer because everything else is screwed up. I've spent days on end troubleshooting. I mean, there's this other thing now that's happening where everything goes to 100%, 100%. We got 100% processor, yet nothing is open on the machine. I think I've been compromised, and I don't know by whom. I don't think it matters by whom. I've been compromised, and I can run any antivirus, and I can run all of the spywares and everything else. I got it all running on here, guys. It sees nothing, and I am just completely compromised so that my day is a miserable piece of shit trying to do anything on the computer. All right, anyway, so what happens when you donate your body to science? Well, let's see what this... Talking about miserable pieces of shit. Let's see what the miserable piece of shit science establishment does with your body, like injecting it with brain balls while you're in a coma. You've heard the phrase probably when you were half watching some science show on PBS, but in truth, it is that you really don't know what it means to quote unquote donate your body to science. Oh, evil laughter. Yeah, the joke is on you. Don't sign it. Don't sign it. And don't ink that thing on the back of your freaking license either. I've read a couple disturbing things about how that gives them the right to harvest your organs before you're even dead. No, thank you. You suspect that your cadaver would be used in an anatomy class at some med school somewhere, but in fact, is your most intimate donation ending up easily in a science experiment? Hey, look, there we go. I hadn't read this whole thing. Or to be used by a surgeon test driving a new medical technology? Well, unfortunately, it's the one thing that nobody sees coming. Once you've offered your body to science, you have no say in where it goes. And another thing you possibly do not know is you need to meet some unexpected criteria for your gift to be accepted. Oh, who knew that? So they even look, donated bodies down the nose if they're not quite right. So let's begin. There is more than one way to skin a cat, it says, and this is strangely appropriate proverb would suggest. There is more than one way to donate your body to science. And all of those ways, though, undoubtedly will start with a difficult conversation. And this is true whether you contact your nearest university or place a call to a professional society such as the International Institute for the Advancement of Medicine or the American Association of Tissue Banks. During the initial discussion, you will note that some people still refer to cadavers, but many professionals are now encouraged to use the more sensitive term of deceased donor. My infant son, and this is not me, this is the person writing the story. My infant son was a donor for research, and I think of him as a contributor to research and a hero, not a cadaver, says Sarah Gray, Director of Marketing and Public Affairs to the American Association of Tissue Banks. Yes, and my cat's leg was also donated to the research. And that's me talking. That was my Oliver back in the, let's see, I was out of college, so it must have been the 90s. When they found that bone cancer, he was the healthiest, most beautiful cat ever. Sleek black puma, healthy, rippling muscles, not a year old. And his entire back leg somehow ended up being full of Swiss cheese. And it was bone cancer. And they had a really strong inkling at that time that it was the rabies vaccination that was causing that. The 3-year, not the 1-year, mind you. And it was the adjuvant, the aluminum adjuvant in the 3-year rabies vaccine. And by the way, that has been proven now. But back in the 90s, they were still researching it. That caused the cancer. And the doctor told me that it was the reason why they no longer gave the injections in the base of the neck like they used to. They now give them in the leg because if they cause the cancer, they could just chop the leg off. And, you know, obviously if it was in the spine, it would be curtains for Fido. So when they did the amputation surgery, which was probably one of the most, I would have to say probably up until that point, it was the most difficult decision I had had to make in my adult life as to whether or not to have this leg amputated, this poor animal that had no idea what was happening. When they took his leg, they asked me to donate his leg to science to Cornell University where they were doing that research. And not too long ago, I'd say maybe a year or so, we talked about this whole thing with vaccinations and cancer and some of my personal proof and stuff that I had been through on a individualized basis and that I researched myself and I talked to doctors because my animal had come down with it. And we had found there is a Wikipedia entry and there's all kinds of studies and research and proof now that those adjuvants do cause, I'm trying to remember what the name of the cancer was. I don't know if I remember, I'll say it, but a carcinoma, no, sarcoma. It's a sarcoma that it causes in the bone, but it was horrific. It turned the bone into Swiss cheese, so it was like all rubbery. And that was 100%. The adjuvant in the 3-year rabies vaccine, and they force rabies vaccines on all of us, just like they're trying to do to our children now with all these other, you know, this meningitis bullshit is not happening in this household. This brand new mandatory vaccine in New York State, fuck that shit. There aren't that many meningitis cases in New York State. There is more damage from the meningitis vaccine than there are cases in New York. And they're going to force that on our kids. And the Gardasil vaccine, there's more and more proof on a daily basis. We dug in deep to that. I think that was one of my probably most listened to shows, was when we dug into the insert on the first Gardasil and then on the new Gardasil 9 that was to replace the old Gardasil because, oh, what? Yeah, it didn't prevent cancer. It actually made all those poor guinea pig children who got injected with it more apt to get the more dangerous cancers. So here, let's take this new vaccine. And now they're finding out, and I had a big argument with the doctor over this one, my daughter's doctor. She told me that this could never possibly be, and I told her I had read a study out of England. She never saw it, so I sent it to her, and, you know, not another peep out of her, but it was showing how it was making young girls sterile, and it was causing them to go into perimenopause at, like, 10 or 14, okay? Don't get your kid that shot. How many of us lived all these years and didn't drop dead of cervical cancer? How many boys, you know, they're trying to force that into the boys now too. How many boys have managed to go their entire lifetimes without getting, as the doctor said, I said, why on earth would boys be getting this? Oh, protects them from anal cancer. Yeah. So how many of us have managed to go an entire lifetime without cervical or anal cancer because we didn't get our Gardasil vaccine? We might all die. Oh, wait. Here, we need to get your child the mandatory chickenpox vaccine, because how many of us have died from chickenpox? And how about that mumps, measles, mumps, rubella? Oh, wait. The CDC whistleblower comes out and says, well, we destroyed the documents that showed the connection to autism. But how many of us have died from measles, mumps, and rubella? I'm not sure about rubella. I'm not sure about rubella. I haven't dug really into that one. But measles and mumps, guess what? Measles. Measles, you got a sore throat and some stuff inside of your mouth, and maybe there were some ancillary infections back before we knew how to use antibiotics. But I hate to tell you, most people did not die from measles, nor did they die from the mumps. And oh, there's an outbreak now of 200 children at Harvard, I think I saw. God forbid, that means that we need to come out with now this new and improved measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. You want to know why they need to come out with a new improved measles, mumps, rubella vaccine? Not because, oh, we just had a 200-person outbreak at Harvard and it must not be working. No, because the population is onto them. The whistleblowers blew the whistle, and all of a sudden, there are fingers pointing to a defective vaccine, which I would have to say that the majority of anything that's out there maybe isn't defective, but it absolutely is mad science gone mad, loaded with nanotech or whatever else. You don't know what's in there. And recombinant animal proteins, SV40, cancer viruses, who the hell knows what's in there? Tomorrow it's going to be little nanobots in your blood, if it isn't already. Or virus-like particles. Or Trojan horse viruses. We talked about that yesterday, too. Genetically modifying your children. But they don't have to replace this vaccine because, oh, it's not effective anymore. They got to replace it because, whoops, they caught us. And now it's time for the new and improved guinea pig vaccine. But guys, I caught mumps in college. The vaccine they gave us when we were kids wasn't fully effective, apparently. And there was some big outbreak in the 80s, is early 90s, I don't know. But I saw it hit Pennsylvania, and that was right about the time I got it. But, I mean, again, fever, achy, ooh, ah, stay in bed for a few days, eat some chicken soup. You know, most people don't die from that. So they try to convince us that this medical establishment knows all. We can bring the dead back. We're gods now, right? This is this whole godlike society. Donate your body to science because you will be providing us with tools to make it better for your children. And the sad fact of the matter is that what they are doing is not making it better for our children. They're finding out better ways to poison us and better ways to do mad science. This isn't about science. This is about Herbert West. This is about Reanimator. This is about living forever. This is what the new rush is. This tech titans investing in longevity projects. And it's not about making you or me or Nana or you know, Fido live forever. It is about using you and me and Nana and Fido as the guinea pigs to figure out how to make not us in particular, but any human or animal live forever. So then we can monetize it. Because see, we don't have the money to pay for the technology. We don't have the money. We're just going to be the free R&D. All right. So anyway, it was a little bit of a tangent, but going back to donating my cat's leg to science and vaccines causing rabies vaccines in particular causing cancer. And let's get back to donating your body to science. So no matter where you turn, you will be expected to answer a series of health related questions to see if you qualify for donating your body to science. And unfortunately, many people do not make it past this point. Like, how offended would you be? You wrestled with this in your mind and back and forth and felt like you were going to do something to help save the planet. You were going to give the ultimate gift, your body, when you die, to science. And these assholes say, sorry, Charlie. You know what? You can go on the chuck it pile and the fertilizer pile. You know, actually, there is a pit. I posted this story a while back on this page. There's a pit at one of the universities. I think it's down in Texas where it's a forensic school. And if you can even imagine, that's what they do. They chuck dead bodies out in this yard. And I'm assuming that it's probably a large yard and there's animals and trees and sun. And they chuck the bodies out there and they let them decompose out in the open. All freewheeling, decomposing out in the open. And then they go use the bodies to learn about forensics. They take like budding forensic scientists out there to go practice on the decomposing bodies in the hot sun. So maybe that's what happens to you if science turns you down. It's just again, let's go back to the question we brought up like weeks ago. What on earth is the value of life anymore? Because there isn't. Do you see, like, when we're chucking cadavers out into a pit in the backyard of a university to let them rot in the sun and let vultures come down and pick out the eyeballs as tasty morsels, where is the value of life anymore? I mean, and I don't care if you donated your body to science thinking that you're doing good for somebody. Nobody deserves. And I don't think there's anyone in their right mind that would sign up to be chucked out in a decomposition pit for science. I mean, maybe, but I don't know too many. Anyway, everybody who calls up who wants to be a donor, they said, we're probably only going to take 30% of those people, says Michael Pierre, lab manager at BioGift Anatomical, a whole body donation company located in Portland, Oregon. At BioGift, this early screening involves 22 medical and social questions that must be answered before giving the next set of questions appearing on the pre-registration papers arriving in the mail. Other organizations follow a similar process as well. And all of these many questions will assemble a rough medical portrait and also screen out those who have communicable diseases, which I can understand that, with a special emphasis placed on Hep B, Hep C, HIV, and syphilis. But on the other hand, I don't know if they're gonna weed out those people with communicable diseases, but I would almost think that you would have like a CDC division of forensics or something, some Dugway proving ground, mad science gone mad, vaccine lab somewhere that you would want somebody who was infected, infectious tissue, to be able to, like in real time, to be able to do research on how to cure these items. I don't know. It seems kind of odd that they would screen them out. I mean, maybe don't put them into the big pot of healthy cadavers, but I definitely would think that there would be a place for them. They also need to weed out anyone who weighs more than the limit. If you pass this hurdle and you qualify for pre-registration, you will receive authorization forms and instructions explaining the donation process, and this is for your body after death, and cards to be distributed to loved ones and healthcare providers. They're going to give you cards to give to everyone. Sometimes, though, the process does not involve the donor. A next of kin can register on a donor's behalf, depending on the circumstances. Oh, my goodness. Before or after their death. Is this when you give someone like your, what is that called, power of attorney? I hope not, because I know when you give someone a power of attorney, like if you're in the hospital and you're going in for surgery, they're going to suggest that. Now, again, this is back when I was having my daughter, and like all these horrible things happened, and they had me ink all these documents while I was all drugged up. And one of them was giving away power of attorney. So you completely give up, if you're incapacitated, you give up rights to make medical decisions upon your behalf, and you're handing them over to someone else. You better trust that person. And you better hope that person knows your wishes. Because, like this poor person, the BioQuark, the poor 20 people that BioQuark are getting their hands on who are clinically brain dead, and they're going to have little mini brain balls shot into them and electroshock therapy and lasers to see if they can be brought back from the dead. Like I said yesterday, I can almost guarantee you that these people have no idea what's about to happen to them. And God forbid they wake up. Like, what is going to happen if they wake up? And then are they going to even tell us that they wake up? I mean, they might tell us if they come back completely intact. But what if they come back like as Frankenstein? They might just have to kill it again. Didn't they have to do that in Reanimator? Anyway, let's get back to this donating your body to science and what that really means. So, yes, they could be making decisions for you whether or not you are alive or dead. For instance, if you have Alzheimer's, and didn't think of that one, your nearest loved ones may act in your interest before you die. The more commonly family members register their loved ones only after death. So can your loved ones donate you to science after you die? It's kind of a scary thought after you're dead, just because you didn't talk about it. If you didn't talk about it, if I didn't walk around telling you, and let's make sure everyone understands this. If I did not walk around telling you that I wanted my body donated to Mad Science Gone Mad, that is not an assumption that I just didn't talk about it because it was sensitive and you are going to donate me on my own behalf, okay? I don't. Make it clear, I do not want any piece of me, not even one, not a pinky, no, not a pinky toe, none of me donated to science, all right? Plant me in the ground. As a matter of fact, if you really want to know, I don't even want to go into the ground. I want a big crypt. Actually, in the 90s again, when I was in Buffalo, Buffalo has an old cemetery called Forest Lawn, and it's very amazing. You should look it up one day because there's very old crypts there, and it's a big park. I think it's Delaware Park, downtown Buffalo, but the cemetery is old and rolling, and it kind of intermingles throughout this park. But they have all kinds of amazing crypts there, and I really wanted a crypt, so I contacted them, and they have real estate agents. At the cemetery, and you can talk to a real estate agent. So yeah, I scoped out a couple crypt designs. Do you want to know? A starting crypt is like 60, and this is in the 90s, $60,000. So yeah, probably not going to get a crypt, but it would be nice, wouldn't it? You could build a whole family crypt and have a little window, sunshine. I don't know. I thought it would be nice. I would have a nice big bat outside or a bawling angel out front. I thought it would be kind of cool. All right, anyway. So I do not want to be donated to science. That everybody remember that. If it ever comes into question, make sure somebody knows. This is on tape. It's on recording. It's digitized, not tape. Remember this episode, 5516. All right. Anyway, so people can donate you even after you die, even if you didn't say that you didn't want to be. And currently, this place in Oregon has 18,000 people that are pre-registered for their program, says managing supervisor of Anatomy Gifts Registry, a nonprofit scientific organization based in Hanover, Maryland. Now, here's another thing that's interesting. These nonprofits, organizations that are working to coordinate you donating your body after death to science. Also, I was looking into, we talked about cord blood and cord blood, quote unquote, donation, them taking it when they convince you in a drug induced emergency room labor that you don't want to bank your child's cord blood yourself privately. You want to give it to them. I dug into that yesterday to see exactly what they do. And I guess there's all these not-for-profit organizations out there that are banking cord blood to then be sold to the medical establishment when someone needs a transplant or whatever. They were saying, oh, it's very, very expensive to store this cord blood. And when you take out a donation, so let's say they need to get it for you, and usually the insurance company will pay it, but it's like $35,000 for a dose of cord blood. Somebody somewhere has got to be profiting from all this. I honestly don't see how all of this is not for profit and these biopharma companies or whatever aren't making any money off of your body being donated and then given to science somewhere for them to do mad science experiments, or your kids cord blood taken at birth and put into some sort of universal bank to then be used or purchased in the need of someone in surgery or transplant. Shouldn't, if I donated, shouldn't there be a grant somewhere from the National Institute of Health to cover those costs? Why should my insurance company that, you know, $35,000 a dose for cord blood, you know, that's going to affect negatively, especially if, you know, insurance isn't what it used to be. Everybody's got a massive freaking deductible on top of it. You got your out-of-pocket that has to come first of $10,000 now. You know, I shouldn't have to be paying for that if it was donated in the first place. And the National Institute of Health or some other publicly funded federal organization should be kicking the cost to store that then. That should not be some sort of, if everything was free, there should not be some sort of huge-ass cost to take out, like a library book, 50 cents, man. Get your card and 50 cents. And if, you know, we got 18,000 people pre-registering with this one company for their body. Are they charged? Like, I don't know. There's got to be profit here somewhere. They're making profit on our body parts, on our body bits and pieces and blood and whatever. This just doesn't seem right. And it's all going to the mad lunatics in charge. We currently have 18, and I mean, I guess we're all chattel, and I guess everything we do makes the money. You know, from the birth to death, we are money-making machines. Currently, we have 18,000 people pre-registered in our program, says Managing Supervisor of Anatomy Gifts Registry, a nonprofit scientific organization based in Hanover, Maryland. Shouldn't these pharma companies that are going to use your body for research be paying for those bodies? And shouldn't that money maybe go back to the estate of the person who donated their body? And I know it's called donation, but shouldn't there be some sort of reward for giving your most precious item, you, to science? According to Niebert, and that is this managing supervisor at Anatomy Gifts Registry, her organization has an average intake of about 70 bodies a month, with more than half of those cadavers being folks who signed up on their own. What happened? Who signed up the other half? Family members who didn't have money to pay for a funeral? I mean, is that... I don't... Honestly, we should read more, because this... Just all this stuff just really heaps me out, because when you're gone, you can't do anything about it. And your family members, you know, be nice to those around you is all I can say, because once you're gone, it's very possible nobody might give two shits about you. And I mean, maybe it won't even matter to you anymore because you're gone. But on the other hand, I would really hope that whoever was around making decisions for me would not have any type of vendetta against me, or would not be completely callous and not give two shits like I would give two shits about myself, and do the right thing by me. After your death is confirmed and reported, your family or caregiver or a hospice representative will contact your donor organization. And once again, all the questions on your medical and social screening survey must be answered. This is necessary to gain a precise picture of your medical health at the moment of death. And sadly, even those who passed a rigorously early screening may be turned away now for any number of possible reasons. The coroner has jurisdiction over us, and if they need to do an autopsy, they do, and that person is no longer a donor. So I didn't know that. If there's an autopsy, you're done. And while this is a rare scenario, other more than likely reasons why donation could be rejected include some previously undisclosed communicable diseases, traumatic injuries to tissues resulting from, say, a car crash, weight gain, or some other medical issue. However, if the cadaver is accepted, the donation process whirls into motion. A lab technician draws blood to test for Hep B, C, syphilis, HIV, even as arrangements for transporting the body are being made. And in almost all cases, the body will arrive at the facility before the test results do, and the organization sets to work. So I'm guessing that if you donate your body to science, obviously there's going to only be a memorial service for you, because there will be nothing to memorialize or have a funeral with. They can't prop you up and put a beer in your hand and take pictures like a weekend with Bernie. No, there's just going to be pictures of you sitting on a pedestal in front of a room of teary-eyed friends and family. This is, so I don't really, so they do all these medical tests. And as the link between cadavers and scientists, the donation organizations are busy making arrangements to fulfill the wishes of their clients. Science care can accommodate almost any need, whether it means shipping ready-to-use tissue directly to biomedical researchers halfway around the world, or setting up an educational event at a university facility where 150 orthopedic surgeons will learn to use a new robotic technology for hip replacement operations. My friend that I went to college with, he got an English degree with me and then went on to become an oral surgeon after that. His dad is an oral surgeon. He now has his own practice in New York City. I talked to him once. It's before I had my daughter, so it was probably 15 or more years ago. But yeah, he had a cadaver at school that they had for the whole semester, and her name was Gertie, and they would have to pull their cadavers out for class and do oral surgery and stuff. It's pretty horrifying. That was like my first real in-your-face introduction to donating your body to science. Anyway, after the maximum amount of tissue has been recovered and placed with medical institutions, the remainder of the cadaver is sent to a crematorium. And in the case of Anatomy Gifts Registry, they are cremated at their special in-house facility. And within 6 weeks, the ashes will be ready to be picked up or mailed to the family. And I just had a flash of an ad that made my spot where I was just reading disappear. So anyway, who donates their bodies to science? Well, let's see. Lots of veterans do. 1 in 3 of our donors are veterans, says Ellsworth, who happened to check the demographics before speaking with Medical Daily. And homemakers are also at the top of the list. But so are also teachers and truck drivers, managers, and then her voice trailed off. Everybody has a specific story. Either their loved ones were suffering from a particular illness, or they want to help other people live longer, healthier lives. It is just in their nature to do everything that they can. But I'm going to tell you something. I myself, my entire life, I have been doing things for others, for animals in particular. Ever since I was a little girl, I've been telling my family and friends I'm going to save the world. And look what I'm doing now. I'm still trying to tell everyone that it's coming. I'm an Aquarian. Aquarians are humanitarians, and I'm not donating my body to science. You know, I don't know. Maybe I might have thought about it once. I think I actually considered signing the back of my license one time for organ donation, but the more I've learned about mad science gone mad and exactly what happens and how corrupt all these institutions are, you're not getting a piece of me. Anyway, everyone has a specific story. Either their loved one was suffering or they want to just help other people live longer. It is in their nature to do everything that they can. After all, only scientists and healthcare professionals know how to go about a donation, since, in her words, the mechanism to donate your body is not understood by most people, but the forms are not also freely available, and you have to go online and figure out where the registries are and what to do. Schober looks forward to the day when the body donation process becomes more developed, easy, like organ donation, in which you sign up for whenever you renew your driver's license. But no matter how confusing the process may be, there appears to be a sharp increase in the number of donors as of late. And on an annual basis, we are looking at doubling the number of donations we had the year before. They see a similar trend and suggest that the sharp increase is like the surge that occurred in 1986 after the Catholic Church said that it was okay to cremate. I didn't realize that. Once that happened, he explained, cremation spiked, and in most states and regions, cremation is the most popular type of burial today. And now organ donation and body donation is moving just like cremation. Although everyone assumes it's about economics after all, by donating your body to science, you'll be helping your loved ones avoid funeral costs. So see, I thought that had something to do with it. Pierre is quick to say that he believes exactly the opposite is true. When you're dealing with death, you're dealing with emotions. And when you can turn negative emotions into something positive, a lot of people appreciate that. And, you know, that little last part is disturbing. So the cost of funerals have become so exorbitant. They have been. And they soak you because insurance doesn't cover much anymore. And after they've sucked the estate dry, paying for treatments at the end of life, there isn't a lot left over to pay for a funeral. So, hey, we got a solution for you. Donate your body to Mad Science Gone Mad, and we'll take care of it for you for free. I don't know, guys. To me, oh, God. So I went to go click on the next story, and here we go again. The whole freaking browser is completely locked up. Oh, I don't know. I have all, you know, this is day number 4 now. Day number four of the show that's been queued up that isn't going to get done, I apparently think. Well, maybe I can hit my Facebook page and reconstruct. Hold on. Let's see if this other computer works now. I'm telling you guys, it is getting very frustrating at the time that it is taking me to reboot and redo and re-everything every single day is definitely, it's a waste of my time. I hate to say it, but it is. I have all these other things that need to get done, and I have a family, and I have a house, and I have shit I got to do, and this just, I am having a lot of difficulty cost justifying all of this bullshit that I deal with on a daily basis. All right, so who knows what that story was, because now I, maybe I can see, oh, yeah, let's look at the injecting the eyeball. Here we go. This is what we ended with yesterday. Google patents device that you inject into your eyeball. So I wonder if they tested this on cadavers donated to science. I really wanted to read more about that injecting brains, but I can't get to that other story. So, forget laser surgery if Google has a say in it. Oh, wait, it's trying to load. If Google has a say in it, we'll soon be injecting devices into our eyes to help improve our vision. By the way, I think what we might have to do is just uninstall Flash everywhere. But I guess that means we won't be able to watch videos or have to read half the web pages that are out there. Hold on. Flash is crashing on this machine at the moment. Up next in terrifying things that I don't want to ever have done. And maybe that will be the title of the show today. Terrifying things I don't want to ever have done. Let's see. Have little mini brain balls injected into my brain, donate my body to science, or have Google contact lenses injected into my eyeball. It's pretty good. Google has filed a patent for a vision-correcting electronic device that has to be injected directly into your eye. The device, Forbes reports, is designed to help the focusing of light on the retina, resulting in the correction of poor vision. Yes. You know what? Don't get laser surgery. You know, like having a laser shot in your eyeball wasn't horrifying enough for LASIK. I would never have that done, by the way. My cousin did. He had to go have it done 2 or 3 times because they screwed it up. Wasn't quite right. Well, even a step beyond that, now let's inject a Google device into our eyeball, destroy the lens that's in your eye from birth, and replace it with a Google lens. Yes. We, you know, you knew this was coming. I knew it was coming. Google is an evil entity. And the second they came out with Google Glass, we found out they had all these wireless radios and shit up next to your eyeball. And then we started looking at some of this ElectRx stuff and DARPA moving into Google and the Brain Project. You knew this was coming. Google Life Sciences, the National Institute of Mental Health director moving over there. You knew it. You knew it. You knew it. Your eye has a direct connect to the brain through the optic nerve. The device, Forbes says, is designed to help the focusing of light on your retina, resulting in the correction of poor vision. It will contain its own storage device, radio, and lens, and will be apparently powered wirelessly from an energy harvesting antenna. We covered those as well. They can harvest energy from your environment, from any of your radio waves or any of the frequencies that are out there. And presumably, you will not need aerial antennas sticking out of your eyeballs. Well, no, because we read about Project Jacquard as well. You'll have your antennas all interwoven into your clothing, and that is another Google DARPA project. Google, of course, did not respond to a request for comment. And although Google has filed the patent, of course, that's no guarantee. No, don't worry about it, that this idea will come to life anytime soon or even at all. So don't freak out, people. Wink. With my bionic eyeball, I'm winking at you. And many patents are filed by tech firms that never, ever see the light of day. But we'll make sure we keep our eye on this one. Ha, ha, ha. That was a joke. With the injectable contact lens. Now, there was a a link that I was reading, and we'll see. This Forbes story, Google has a penchant for far-out tech that never reaches the market. So again, don't worry. And this is the latest method of injecting a device into an eyeball. I mean, guys, like, eyeball stuff is one of those skeevy things that I just can't even deal with thinking about, let alone someone injecting stuff into an eyeball. Described in a patent application dated to April 28th of 2016, so this is just a week ago, the device is injected in fluid that then solidifies to cup of device with the eye's lens capsule, that transparent membrane that surrounds the lens. The injection would take place following the removal of the natural lens from the lens capsule. So Google's going to suck out your native eyeball lens and replace it with theirs. The planned device injected into the eye contains a number of tiny components, storage, sensors, radio, battery, and an electronic lens. And the eyeball device gets its power wirelessly from an energy harvesting antenna. The patent describes what looks like an external device to interface with the eyeball computer. They called it that, the eyeball computer. And the two will communicate through a radio, and the interface device contains a processor to do all of the necessary computing. This isn't the first time that Google has worked on technology that you can stick right into your eyeball. In early 2014, it began talking about the Google Contact Lens that measured glucose levels in tears with people with diabetes. And we talked about that one. And at that time, I said, do not ever put anything Google into your eyeball. The glucose measuring contact lens is now part of Verily, which is a division under Google and Alphabet's Life Sciences. And that is where the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, Tommy Insel, went over to. Tommy now has a direct connect to the brain. Anyway, so he reached out to Verily for comment, and Verily has not commented yet. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around because it is Thursday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next. And then we have Ron at 7, live 8, behind the woodshed, and at 10, Antimedia right here with SM Gibson. All right, guys, have an awesome Thursday. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.